Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine with your host, Susan Weed. I'm Daniel Michael, the founder, co-creator of the Main Street Universe Network. And that song was Before Moonlit Nights by my good friends, Woven Green. And Ashley may be lending her voice, and her husband may be lending some of his guitar expertise on our album. We're still working all of those things out. And I think maybe planning for a Halloween release. But what a great chemistry that would have a husband and wife team to join us. But tonight, you're listening to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed. And there's a link directly on this show page to check out some of her books and some of her work. And I see she's in the queue, and I'm going to go ahead and bring her on. Welcome, Susan.
Green blessings. How are you this evening?
Doing very well. Been a long week, but I feel good. And we did a little jamming out in the studio earlier. So we're sort of auditioning our guest musicians and future musicians for our band. So we're auditioning a fiddle player, girl singer sometime later within a week or so, and some other people. So we've got some interesting things going on here at Cafe Fairfax, the studios where we do these shows from.
Well, I thought that was a different song than you usually played at the opening.
Yes, they're our good friends, Woven Green. And recently they played at a festival that's called Stop the Kaboom, which is to help raise awareness to stop the unfortunate practice in Appalachia. As you may know, I'm in Virginia. I'm in Northern Virginia, but this is West Virginia. And of mountaintop removal, which basically uses, in a few weeks, I actually heard one person say it's about what a Hiroshima bomb is. And they just destroy the tops of mountains and then go and take whatever's inside that they think they need and then move on, pretend to rebuild, pretend that that's how they sell it. The rebuilding part will help your economy in some of these poor towns. But they almost never follow up on the promise. I think something like 4% of the time they followed up on that promise. So it's a very terrible issue going out in West Virginia, Kentucky, Appalachia region in general.
And I think it's a kind of general and misleading practice everywhere that big companies say, look, you know, we're going to do something a little disruptive, but we'll pick up after ourselves. And they don't.
And when we do, we'll help employ your folks and all of that, you know, they try to sell it like that.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It's a terrible issue. It really is like one of the worst examples of just corporations run amok, you know, just doing what they want.
This is coal mining, is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's basically for coal. They might go in for other minerals too, but it's mostly for coal, and you should see the devastation, how much of it. It's not a very widely told story, but it covers large areas of sparsely or not so very populated sections of the country. And again, it's, you know, the areas are often poor people, so it's like, you know, they're not exactly getting the full attention.
Not considered as important. And I believe also, because I have heard about this, that one of the reasons that it is not talked about so much is because people want to have inexpensive energy. And it's not easy to look at where it comes from.
Right, and so then you get fracking, which is another one I'm not too fond of, and then you get mountaintop removal. I think people just saw it. They could just see. It's something like they only have to be a few hundred yards away from the nearest neighborhood. Imagine that just being explosions like you're in a war zone, you know, in your small village out there in Appalachia somewhere. You would just think you were at war a few hundred yards away, enough to blow off the top of a mountain.
Wow.
The regulations involved, how this even happened, it's just, I mean, we know how, but it's just, who are the elected officials? I mean, my God, I just think of those things like, oh, I'm the guy.
Well,
that, like,
again, you know, as you say, it's put forward as it's going to help the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that, okay, let's help the economy. And again, something that I was told that makes sense to me is that one of the reasons that this was allowed is because people were very concerned about mining accidents and the conditions that the miners were working in. And this eliminates mining accidents, doesn't it?
And that's part of it. It also eliminates the landscape.
Mining.
But, yeah, that's part of it. Because they say, well, we take the human element out. We don't have people getting hurt in mines anymore.
Right, exactly.
And all of that. So there's different ways to look at it. But if you really see the overhead pictures of the havoc that's wreaked, the havoc that's left behind, the damage that's left behind, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's almost like, it almost is like a war zone. Like they just blow it up and leave. It is just take what they can from the heart of the mountain and go. It's just amazing.
Well, let us send a thought to all of those mountains that have been slowly formed. And let us offer them our energy, should they in any way want to get back. Because, you know, the earth has a way of doing that, doesn't she?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
might not be pleasant.
it may not indeed be pleasant, but it could indeed be that that the Earth will find a way to make it right. I'm a pretty actually relaxed about the Earth as a whole. As you say, looking at the large picture often gives one a different view, and the planet is between 4 and 5 billion years old, and it's been a fireball, an ice ball, a water ball, all kinds of things. And our tenure here is very brief. And, of course, most of the time when we say, oh, the Earth is in trouble, we mean, oh, we're in trouble.
Yes.
Because the Earth, you know, even if nothing lived on it, the Earth would still be here. Interestingly enough. Yep. So, seeds. Things are going to seed, aren't they? Have you noticed when you've been out walking around that things are going to seed?
Yes.
It's that time of the year. And this year, this week, for my e-zine, I did a seed weed walk, a seedy weedy walk, to go around and look at some of the seeds that are available to us right now. My granddaughter and I were playing together yesterday, and we were playing on her trampoline, and it's by an area that was cleared, a small area that was cleared for a garden, but wasn't planted to a garden this year. And that area has grown in literally fence to fence, side to side, in big, tall jewelweed. Matter of fact, we went in there, and the jewelweed was like, easily a foot and a half taller than my granddaughter. It was even a little bit taller than I was. And why do we go into this big, tall forest of jewelweed? Because we wanted to eat jewelweed seeds. Jewelweed is very common there in Virginia, West Virginia. Are you familiar with it?
Jewelweed? Actually, no, I'm not.
It's a plant that grows in damp to wet areas, and it has really pretty distinctive, almost orchid-like, but small, orange flowers or yellow flowers.
Okay. I might have seen them and just didn't know what it was.
I think you have. I think you have, because they're common. And the stalks are almost translucent, almost like you can see through them.
Hmm.
They're green, but they're kind of a clear green. And it'll often grow, you know, where there's like a little waterway in the spring and then that dries up in the summer. That's a favorite place for jewelweed to grow. And Jewel Gibbons popularized it as a plant that could help to prevent and get rid of poison ivy. And that's what most people think of it. They always see jewelweed. Oh, yeah, that's the one that gets rid of poison ivy, right? And it does. It does a fair job of that. But what Monica Jean and I were after were seeds, because this time of the year, those orange or yellow orchid-like but small flowers have dropped down into seed pots. And the botanical name of jewelweed is impatience. And yes, it is related to the impatience that we grow in gardens. And it's called impatience because if you touch the seed pot, if you just touch it, it goes, and it springs into these coils, and the seeds go flying. So you have to reach out very carefully and grab this little seed pod by putting your hand around it. And then it goes, inside your hand, making you go, and then you open your hand. And if you've chosen carefully, there's two or maybe even three seeds. Oh, golly, how big are these? I guess they're about the size of sunflower seeds, maybe a little bit smaller. And you pop those into your mouth, and they are like black walnuts. You can tell by eating them that they're loaded with omega fatty acids. This is actually true of all of the seeds, the wild seeds that we eat. They are fabulous sources of omega-3 fatty acids and usually some omega-6s as well. We think about flaxseed, and people say, oh, yes, you know, eat flaxseed for the omega-3 fatty acids and for the lignans and other things. And all of those things that you've read about flaxseed are true for virtually all of the wild seeds. So if you don't want to go out and purchase flaxseed, or flaxseed messes up your gut, because it can for some people, think about some of these other wild seeds that you could eat. Now, obviously, we are not harvesting enough yuleweed seeds to actually put by for the winter, but I have heard that people have done so. If you get into a really thick batch of it, and it can grow very, very thickly, covering a half an acre or more of land in a big open stream that had dried up for the summertime, then you could actually harvest an appreciable amount of these seeds. This weekend at the Wise Women Center, we had two work-learn days. And work-learn days are a little bit more laid back than our work exchange days, where we usually do the heavy work. I save gentle herbal tasks for the work-learn days. And one of the gentle herbal tasks that I had the helpers do this weekend was to harvest plantain seed. And plantain is also quite abundant where you are. And this is the perfect time to start harvesting the plantain seed. We're talking about the large leaf plantain, the one that has the thick stalk of seeds. Many people remember plantain seed stalks from when they were children, because many children will play with these seed stalks by holding the end of the seed stalk in one hand and then stripping the seeds off the stalk with the other hand, in almost like a kind of pushing motion that sends the seeds flying out toward whoever you are playing with, in a way that could be called shooting the seeds. And certainly when I've seen little boys doing it, they do appear to be playing rather warlike with it. But I've also seen girls playing with them. And they're more, you know, thinking of it as fairy dust and rain and all kinds of fun things, because it really is fun to scatter those seeds from the plantain. So look for the broadleaf plantain. Look for those big seed stalks. This year is a great year for harvesting plantain seed. Some of my seed stalks are as much as 2 feet tall. Now, usually it's going to be more like 6 to 8 inches. But some of them have gotten really enormous this year. And you will see that they're in a variety of stages of ripening. What we want are the ones that are brown but still full of seeds. And, of course, like all wild plants, it simply doesn't do for plantain to ripen all of its seeds at once. That doesn't make sense for a wild plant. As a matter of fact, it's contrary to its survival to ripen all of its seeds at once. Now, when we cultivate plants, we cultivate them to ripen all their seeds at once so that we can easily harvest them. But in nature, if a plant were to ripen all of its seeds at once and there was a drought or a fire or a flood or an animal, then that plant would just be out of luck, as it wouldn't have any viable seeds left. But by ripening their seeds over a length of time, the wild plants are able to survive even through disasters of the type that I just mentioned. So we can't go out and just cut down all the plantain seed stalks and throw them in a basket and say, I've harvested the plantain seed. We have to go back, you know, I go back approximately once every week and check where the plantain is growing and look for these long stalks of seeds that are brown, but where the seed pod is still intact and the seed has not been scattered, because the plantain, of course, is going to scatter the seed itself. I think we have talked perhaps before about plantain seed, because it's one of the few herbal remedies that you can take yourself into any drugstore and order up. Well, no, of course, if you ask them for plantain seed, they might not know what you're asking for. You'd have to ask instead for a bulk-producing laxative or a fiber supplement. And plantain seed and the husk of plantain seed are sold today in drugstores for these uses by a variety of brand names, sometimes flavored with different things. So this makes plantain, in a way, an steal seed to harvest, because we eat and use the husk right along with the seed. With the jewelweed seed, the husk kind of choing, uncurls by itself, and there it is lying next to the seeds. So we don't really have to worry about that. And with the plantain, we actually consume the husk as well as the seed. In fact, producing laxatives are usually just the husks of the plantain, not our plantain, not the Plantago majus, the broadleaf plantain, but Plantago psyllium, which grows in South America. And, of course, the seed is known as psyllium seed or psyllium seed husk. I line a shallow basket with a piece of tissue paper and then carefully lay the plantain seed stalks into that basket parallel so that they can dry, and that once a week when I go out to harvest more plantain seed, I turn what plantain seed I have drying, and if it's dry enough, kind of group it together so that I have more room, thus leaving me more room to harvest more plantain seed. When it's all dry, I strip it off the stalks, as though I were a child playing at it, into a bowl, and then pour it into a jar with a tight-fitting lid. And if you have eaten anything or gotten anything that has one of those little silica gel packages in it, you can tell they're a little package and it's usually printed on it, do not eat. No, don't eat it. What it is a desiccant. It's a safe, natural silica gel. And it absorbs moisture, and I always drop one of those into my jars with my wild seeds, just in case I hadn't dried them enough. That will dry any residual moisture out of it. And if you're concerned about it, you can switch them off so that you continually get a fresh one in there. And I started using silica gel when I first got interested in plants, because we would use it to dry plants in the oven by baking them slightly, and the silica gel is recharged by baking it just slightly in the oven, and that drives the moisture off from it. So I've never put any of the little packets in the oven, and so long as you didn't turn the oven up on high, which would cause them to burn, it would probably work all right. I'm not sure. I put plantain seed in almost any grain that I make. I can put plantain seed in cornbread. I can put it in my brown rice when I cook my rice. I put it in my oatmeal. When I make oatmeal, plantain seed can go in pancakes and waffles and all kinds of baked goods. So don't overlook the plantain seed, another great source of omega fatty acids, those essential fatty acids that are so important for joint health and for heart health as well. What other kinds of seeds were we harvesting? There are yellow dock seeds available. You familiar with the plantain or the yellow dock, Daniel?
The yellow dock seed? No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Let me describe it to you, and I bet you'll say, oh, that. The seed stalk is anywhere from knee-high to waist-high, and it's covered with small russety brown seeds that are quite persistent. It's almost like a feather, but not feathery. It's kind of dense because it comes up in this elongated seed stalk, and the stalks are often high enough that they stick up above the snow, and you can see these rusty-colored seeds even during the wintertime.
Mm.
And that's yellow dock, and those seeds are fully formed on the plant now. Yellow dock is in the buckwheat family. So the seeds from the yellow dock are sometimes called wild buckwheat, although there is a plant called wild buckwheat, which has much bigger seeds than the yellow dock. Yellow dock seed has several difficulties. First of all, the husk is not really edible. The husk on the yellow dock seed is quite astringent, making it unpleasant, to say the least, to eat it. I read in books that native peoples ate yellow dock seed, but I'm going to guess that they didn't do it out of preference. They didn't say, oh, let's go harvest some of that yummy yellow dock seed. They said, there's some yellow dock seed. Let's put this that aside in case it gets to the next March and we're starving and have nothing else to eat. Because it is almost impossible to get the husks away from the seeds, which are really small but not tiny. Now, I know this may seem silly, but tiny seeds like amaranth seeds and lamb's quarter seeds will go through a metal sieve. And so it's easy to get the husks away from the amaranth and the lamb's quarters. But the seeds of the yellow dock are actually just about the same size of the husk. So I've never been able to find any strainer of any kind that will let me sift one away from the other. The way that I primarily use yellow dock seeds is to make a vinegar. And I fill a jar no more than half full with my yellow dock seeds and then pour apple cider vinegar over the whole thing, filling the jar right up to the top. And the vinegar turns off of this lovely kind of orangey, rusty color and has the most amazing taste. Yellow dock root is known as an important herbal medicine. It has two primary uses. One is to magnify the body's ability to get iron into the tissue. So the iron level in the blood comes up very rapidly when people are using yellow dock. And secondly, yellow dock is considered the best of all plant medicines for regularity. Remember that the heroic tradition is very freaked out about constipation, and so they have actually searched the world for herbs that are very strongly opening, which would be purgative, very mildly opening, which would be aperient, or kind of in between, which is laxative. And yellow dock is the mildest of the aperient herbs. It has a very subtle effect on both the small and the large intestine to increase the force of the peristaltic waves, unlike laxatives, which actually jam up those peristaltic waves in the intestines, making it harder and harder to have a bowel movement without the laxative. Now, the people that I know who swear by a yellow dock root do take it on a daily basis. And I have tried to convince some of them, well, don't you think it's a cure and that, like, you really don't need to use it anymore? And none of them have really been willing to give it up. Rhubarb root is related to yellow dock root, and rhubarb root is a very big purging laxative and causes very powerful evacuations from the large intestine. And it was used on sailing ships of yore when people were eating salted meat and salted beans and drinking water sometimes that was brackish as well. And all of that salt, so drying to the intestines and so difficult then for a bowel movement. Well, rhubarb root to the rescue. But for most of us, we don't really need rhubarb root. The yellow dock root will do it, or yellow dock seeds, which have pretty much the same action as the yellow dock root, but again, in a milder and friendlier and nicer way. So those are just a few of the seeds that are ripe and ready for us to harvest. Why don't we continue talking about wild seeds and how we can harvest them and use them next week? Does that seem to suit you? Because we have, what, once again, a minute of our show left?
Something like that. And that sounds like a great idea to continue. I do eat chia seeds sometimes. I know they're not, or I put them in a smoothie sometimes. I know they're not local.
Hey, there you go. Mm-hmm. One of the kind of general rules that we know about seeds is that seeds contain anti-nutritional factors. And these anti-nutritional factors interfere with our body's ability to utilize key compounds for the immune system. So it's imperative that we always roast seeds or boil them or cook them in some way before we eat them.
I've heard that too, that they need that extra thing. Or, like you said, make a vinegar, right? Would that be similar?
Or make a vinegar, exactly. What some people do is to soak the chia seed overnight and then pour the water away, although when I've soaked chia seed, there isn't any remaining water because they just suck it all up. But I think that native people did roast and then grind the chia seed and use it in with corn and probably an admixture of other wild seeds as well, like some of the ones that we're discussing.
Okay. And I want everybody to know that people can reach Susan Weed to a link attached to the site. It takes you right where you can check out her books. And I want to thank you for joining us again, Susan.
You are welcome. And let's see, we have one more show coming up in August. And then I'm going to be taking that break again the first week of September because I'll be out in California teaching. So I'm looking forward to getting CD with you next week.
That's right.
All right. Till then, good night and green blessings, everyone.
Thank you very much for joining us. Green blessings to you. And you've been listening to Susan Weed. And we'll take you out here with our friends Woven Green again. Have a good evening, everyone.
The full moonlit nights, an infant cries in the great void of silence before we knew time. A miracle spawned the dawn of life. Hear all the stories of how we came to be, our legends, myths, and our hero themes that share the secrets of our cosmic seed. Spin round the starlight, oh ancient sun. Spin round until a new day has come. Oh mother and father, where do we come from? Day and night, black and white, the great divide.
We learn to love and surrender to
Egyptian archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.